This is Mental, the podcast to destigmatize mental health. I'm Bobby Temps.
I'm Danny Hogan.
Each Thursday, we delve into a factor or condition that influences the mind and how to better manage it. With special guests and stats you can trust, here we go. This week, we're talking all about surf therapy with Chris Primacio, an area of mental health support that is very much up and coming, cutting edge, and listening to her talk about it, I couldn't not be excited. You know, I went from knowing virtually nothing about surfing, let alone surf therapy, to now thinking, I need to be in it. Do I need to set up my own branch? You know, that is the level of energy and enthusiasm in this interview. So first off, I've got a definition for surf therapy. This is from the Global Journal of Community Psychology Practice, which defines it as intervention combining surf instruction with activities for psychological, physical, and psychosocial well-being, which I think I should immediately give another caveat. So psychosocial is basically social factors in our psychology. But I guess because it's a psychological journal, they assume you'd already know that. And that was the first time a psychological journal had ever given a whole issue to surf therapy as well.
Wow. I'm blown away by it. And somebody that thinks they know a bit about sport and a bit about mental health, I'd never come across it. We're so excited to the point that even when you said it to me, oh, you know, we've got a guest coming on and we talked about surf therapy, and anybody that I've mentioned it to still would go kind of, what? Surf therapy? Like, what's that? What does that mean? As simple as it, like surfing, which we all know, and therapy. But putting them together, I was like, surf therapy, thinking it was something completely different. Like surf was like an acronym almost for something else, not actual surfing. So amazing, isn't it? We're really excited by this.
Yeah. And I think the more I got to talk to the guest about it and talk to you about it, it includes so many of the elements that we talk about all the time. You know, there's exercise, there's time in the outdoors, there's learning a new skill and how empowering that can be. You know, even for us, you know, living nowhere near the sea, you know, we could be hardly further from it being in Birmingham. And so even that is like stepping outside of your comfort zone and your normal routine, which can be really refreshing. And then that's all brought together by group conversations and facilitation around mental health chat. And particularly this organization that Chris is part of has an additional layer of the way they focus as well. So they'll say, okay, this particular session, it's going to be for veterans, or it's going to be from people from a homeless population, or kids that are vulnerable, whether it's to getting in with the wrong crowd or whether they're struggling at school. You know, all these groups that could have very similar experiences but may not be inclined to go to other kinds of support, or may not have the options of other kinds of support. And so that's really incredible as well, to think of being part of this group thing, learning a new skill, getting to chat about it among peers and talk about your mental health. Wow.
I want to do it. I want to go on a course. I want to get on it, because not only are all those amazing things are addressed that you've just said, which are in themselves just amazing, you could put a full stop on it and be like, wow, what an amazing initiative. But also for somebody that feels passionately about breaking down barriers in sport particularly, and who can play what sport, or the sports that certain groups of kids navigate to because they see people that look like them. I just think it's brilliant as well, because it's also just introducing people to something completely new, to think about surfing as a young kid from an area where you may have a sea and you may be from an island or whatever, but surfing's still just something that you just never partake in, just because it's just not what we do here really, or our community necessarily. I just think it's brilliant for that as well. Just opens doors for kids who potentially could be like world surfing champions but never get on a surfboard. Brilliant.
Yeah, it's really important. And there's a particularly moving part of the interview where I won't give too much away, but I don't normally get tearful in these interviews. You know, I don't have an excuse for that. But this one in particular, there was a part where we were talking about one particular initiative that I just thought was so incredible, because it had all the elements we've talked about. And then the additional part of working with kids who otherwise, like you say, would never have access to this sport, but even didn't have access to sport at all. All the kits and all the equipment and the training, and this was all paid for and fundraised. And then, you know, the difference even a day of that can make, where a kid thinks, oh, wow, I've done this sport I'd never even thought of, certainly never thought I could do, and now I can do that. Maybe there's all sorts of other things I might be able to achieve.
Absolutely.
So look out for that. But overall, such an empowering, uplifting, passionate interview with Chris. And to give you some background on her work, she is the executive director of the International Surf Therapy Organization. And that was founded back in 2017 and now represents 89 surf therapy organizations spanning 6 continents. They also work to champion research, best practices and inclusion in this really fast growing area of support. So the number of registered organizations have already grown 10 times in the last 4 years since they founded. And so it was so exciting to talk about all the progress that's been made so far in something that I think we will be hearing so much more about in the next few years. They've already had features in the likes of National Geographic, the New York Times, BBC News, NPR, so many more. So I think it's only a matter of time. And I've purposely left out a lot of the statistical background on this one, because I'm going to let Chris share the impact for herself, because she does such an incredible job of explaining how life-changing surf therapy can be. And I should also mention that I found out about her and indeed what surf therapy was in the first place via my brilliant friend Nina Abasoria, who hosts Being on the Inside. It's an eclectic podcast about the challenges and triumphs of being human, and I'll link that in the episode description if you want to hear an even more in-depth interview with Chris, or just, yeah, go listen to a podcast that I really enjoy. And one last thing to mention before we get into that interview is the People's Choice Podcast Awards. So thanks to the incredible support of our listeners in the past, we won in the health category for 2019 and 2020.
Oh my god!
You already know this information, but you're still so excited. I love it.
So excited. Always.
And this, it is really exciting. And it also just helps the show. You know, it helps us book really cool guests like Chris. It helps us reach new listeners and just keep the show going. Nearly 200 whole episodes in.
So good. Thank you to everybody. It's amazing, isn't it? We're still going strong. We'll continue to bring our best every week, and it's so cool to be recognized for it, and hopefully, you know, we might help someone out there. Obviously that's always our intention, so I'm always buzzing about that. We don't do it for that, for accolades of course, but to be recognized is really cool.
Mm-hmm. It is so important, and we really appreciate the support and the messages we receive and the reviews and everything like that as well. To get nominated this year, maybe win it a third year running, we need your votes. And from there, a collection of listeners and fellow podcasters vote for the winner. So basically, you guys can help us get shortlisted, and from there, a panel will decide if we are the winner for this year. It's really quick to do. If you just visit podcastawards.com, you can find our show in the health category, as always. You'll also find our new show, Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast, under the society/culture and the comedy categories. So thank you in advance if you get to vote for us in those. So with that all said, we'll get into the interview in a moment, all about surf therapy. But first, who's our sponsor? Let's find out. We're currently sponsored by the team at Grass & Co., an independent business based here in the UK that is committed to crafting the best wellbeing products.
And these include bath salts, candles and sleep pillow sprays that incorporate natural scents and botanicals that are all ethically sourced, plus CBD balms and oils that are batch tested to make sure they are THC free.
We've been sent some samples to try, and the one I've been going back to the most is the Ease Muscle Balm. Most recently, it helped me out with the post-vaccine arm ache. Not only can I feel it working right away, but the light scent that includes tea tree and eucalyptus makes it a new favourite of mine.
I love how you say the post-vaccine arm ache, like it's a thing. I know that most people experience it, but you said it like it's an actual condition, like a proper, you know, diagnosable thing. The post-vaccine arm ache, love that. You said it rolled off the tongue like your stomach will all go, oh yeah, we know that. We know the post-vaccine arm ache. It's so funny.
Yeah, it was really helpful for that, to be honest, because please everyone get your vaccine. But yeah, there was a 24 hours of soreness. So yeah, good to have something to hand. And you can try the products out for yourself, find out what they're useful for you, and get 25% off with our code health if you visit grassandco.com/health. And you'll also get free shipping. That's grassandco.com/health with our code health.
Grass and Co, a life inspired by nature. I think that's my favourite tagline yet.
Good. We'll leave that in, you saying that. So, we have previously talked about the weighted blankets from Remy Sleep, and I can confirm they remain incredible. So snug, reassuring, and scientifically proven to help you fall asleep faster, for longer, and even ease some symptoms of anxiety.
This last year has been a reminder of how vital sleep is, particularly when so much of our life has been disrupted. I've just had the worst year, really, of sleep, I think. Really being disrupted so often with so many thoughts going on and just realising that I'm sleeping less and less. So any chance I get to sleep, including naps, are just so energising. So in a world that at the moment is all about rushing around and productivity, we've been talking a lot lately about the need to prioritise ourselves.
For sure. It makes, as we know, such a massive difference to our mental health. And I have that still today as the adult I am, where I wake up and I'm like, is it depression or did I just sleep badly? And it's quite important, I think, to know which is which and what you can do about it. So having tried out Remy's 6 kilogram lounger blanket, I can confirm it does create the feeling similar to being hugged that people hype about with weighted blankets. And as part of their summer collection, it does a brilliant job of not retaining heat during these hot nights. I'm even wearing it right now just to be in the mood for this ad, and it's so cozy. I've also got my eye on their weighted blanket specifically for sleeping, so we'll be using our own promo code for that.
And I just can't wait to get one because they look amazing as well. So you can also try a Remy blanket out for yourself, risk-free, with their 100-night trial, which is amazing, I think, including free delivery and returns. This covers their wide range of sizes, weights and colours.
Yeah, and that shows a level of confidence, really, because if someone's got a blanket for 100 nights, you don't know what stain is coming back in, what's been spilt on it, what cat has made it its new home. And so, yeah, it shows the confidence in their products. And as always, you can get an exclusive discount as one of our listeners, which is 15% off at remysleep.com with our code MENTAL15. That's remysleep.com. With code MENTAL15, you'll even get free next day delivery.
Thank you for having me, Poppy. Really excited to be here and pretty honored. My name is Chris Permacio. My generation, of course, didn't talk about mental health, and we didn't talk about what ails us on any given day. It's really only through hindsight, you got me thinking, that I recall this incident and how profound of an impact it had on my well-being. So I was 3, my sister was 4, and we were staying at my uncle's house. My father was in the Navy Reserves, so once a month over the weekend, he would stay on base. And I loved those weekends because we got to go to our aunties and our uncles, and we got to see all our cousins and literally have sleepovers. But during this one weekend at my uncle's, his dog attacked my sister. She had just gone into the garden to ask him if we could have some pop. I don't know if you guys call it pop there, soda.
Yeah, we do in the Midlands, we do, yeah.
Okay, I grew up calling it pop. And because we always ask permission, you don't just take from the refrigerator or food, you just ask permission. Anyway, the dog actually bit her face. I can only remember pieces of the next several days. I remember immediately standing up in the back seat of my uncle's car, because back then you didn't have to be seat belted in. And obviously I'm standing up because I'm leaning over into the front seat where my sister is lying down. And I'm trying to calm her down, even though I'm, of course, crying hysterically. My uncle is hyper focused on getting us to the hospital. And the very next thing I can remember is all of my aunties and uncles and cousins at my auntie's house. And everything's really quiet. And we're just sitting there and none of us even know what happened or what's happening. Honestly, I didn't even know if she was alive. And of course, later I learned that the bite was so close to her eye, the doctor thought she might lose it. And thinking back on this, I don't remember going home. I can't recall the first time I saw her after she got out of the hospital. I've completely blocked it out. As a matter of fact, I can only visualize photographs where her face was bandaged up on her left side. And much, much, much later in life, like within the past 15 years, I remember my dad described the moment when he got to the hospital room and had to immediately excuse himself because he threw up. And obviously, this entire event had a much more negative impact on my very dear sister. But the part that deeply affected me is that we never talked about it. Not once while I was growing up. I had witnessed the most horrific incident of my entire life, 3 years old. And I had to keep every feeling about it bottled up inside. And in reflection of this question, it really wasn't until I thought about this. I still do it. When I feel most down, yesterday was Father's Day here in the United States. And it's another reminder that my dad is gone. And I just want to be alone. I always prefer to be alone in probably my darkest moments. And that idea that sharing it with others, it's not even that I associate it with a negative response, because I never shared it at all, or the event that I experienced when I was 3 years old. So it's not that it's negative. It's just I learned at this early age not to share such profound personal events, which is really, when I look back on that, it's really sad. And I think about that little girl who could have used somebody to confide in, you know, and somebody to shoulder to cry on. And the irony of all of this, Bobby, is I'm not scared to show people my emotions in the sense of I cry at McDonald's commercials, the one with the dad and the daughter and they're sharing French fries. It's sort of a running joke with my friends and my nieces, really anybody who knows me. I cry so easily. And I always say, well, I cry because it matters. So I don't have the sense of, oh, I can't be vulnerable in front of people. But I think that again, this particular moment in my life that I had not thought about, I have processed it so little that I fear I have done myself a disservice. And thanks to you, Bobby, I am now, I'm going in and digging deep. So thank you for that, because it absolutely has affected how I deal with things today. And I didn't pinpoint that until I had to really think about what was sort of this first event that I can remember might have affected my behavior today. And I went all the way back until I was 3 years old. So thank you for that.
Sure. And that's why it's important to me that we start the interviews in this way. So newer listeners may not know there's a question I ask before the guest starts speaking that we crop out. And it's not a set question. I just kind of give them an idea of what we'd like to hear. And it's along the lines of sharing an early experience relating to mental health. So that could be the first time they ever heard the term mental health. It could be the first time they struggle with symptoms or a family member did. And so often it ends up being similar to what you've said. It's, well, we didn't talk about it growing up. Or, you know, this thing did happen, but it's only you asking me that makes me think about it, because it sounds like it just got so normalized that you didn't talk about it. So you've got that side of it that, you know, nobody talked about it. So you as a three-year-old, you think, oh, maybe we don't need to. Maybe we don't talk about things like this. And then combined with then you're not getting the practice talking about it. So whilst you're very articulate about your emotions now, you did miss out on a lot of practice when you were younger. And then the final element, it sounds like, is quite a natural trauma response where a lot of those memories you'd blocked out. And it's interesting hearing you say you can remember the photos of the time, but you can't remember your actual memories, your view on it. And for some people, even the photos, they can't recognize. And so it's interesting how so often it takes looking through your life in order. And then you start to notice these things. Like I said to you off air the other day, how my CV, as silly as a comparative example as that is, my CV only makes sense in reverse. You know, so often we have to look back to be like, oh, actually, I can see how these things added up to where I am now.
Absolutely. I agree with all of that. And I still am trying to even remember that time. It was never discussed. I never had the practice or the skills. And frankly, that comes from a generation above me that did not have the skills to talk about it. Therefore, that is passed along. So it had a massive effect on me. And I love that you brought that out in me. I am forever curious. And I am much more curious about other people. It's interesting. But I love that feeling of being surprised, obviously with other people, but even with myself, as I'm learning more about myself, I'm thinking, I am 50 years old. What? How am I still learning about myself? I mean, I obviously will continue to learn about myself forever, but I'm sort of sitting in shock over the weekend thinking about this topic that I did not grow up discussing. And it would have served us well in school if this was prioritized. You know, I'm sad that I know how to do calculus because I've yet to have to do calculus ever in my life. And of course, now with technology, I don't have to. I could type in a formula and it will produce the answer. But what the internet will not produce is the process of these very deep emotions that we go through in our childhood. And very often we don't deal with or discuss until we're adults. I can't thank you enough. I want to just keep saying that. Yes, you sort of just put this general idea out, but it really got me thinking in a good way. I feel lighter and a little bit more in touch with who I am and who I have been in my relationships because of having to dive into the deep end. So,
well, and maybe an apt metaphor given what we're going to be talking about today with therapy. Wow. And so I want to start leading into today's topic with something else that I know that you've had to spend some time processing and that today's theme is a big part of that processing. Am I right in saying that was losing your dad?
Absolutely. There isn't anything more profound than that experience. And on one hand, I want to, and I do very often, I count the seconds and the minutes and the hours that I was so blessed to have him in my life. And he raised my brother and my sister and, of course, me. You know, he was just, I had him up on a pedestal. And rightfully so, although my therapist tells me I might have had him too high up on a pedestal. But as I mentioned earlier, he was in the Navy Reserves. He retired as a captain in the Navy, one of the first ever Filipino captains in the Navy, which is just a huge monumental thing when my father was one of eight children, born in Maui, raised in Oahu, barefoot, and they lived minimally. And he was the only one of eight that went to college. And he actually received the first ever scholarship that was given at Seattle University, which is where he graduated from. And he was an engineer at Boeing. And during all of this, he was raising three children who were not easy on him. We were very difficult. We fought a lot. We didn't make life easy for him. And he had dinner on the table every single night. He is still the best chef I have ever been lucky enough to have and experience his food. Just how important and impactful he he was in my life and that I had the privilege to watch him live his. I don't feel like I can say that about a lot of people. I think that is very special that we have this honor to watch somebody who becomes our hero, if that's the term, if that's even the right term. He just is somebody I wanted to emulate in every way. And I attribute my relationship with my mother due to how my father responded to her. My mother, who left when I was in diapers, came back into our lives and, you know, wanted to be closer to us and a part of our life. And my father welcomed her with open arms and said, "You're the mother, of course." And so, again, as a witness to how my father responds, you can't help but want to emulate that kind of goodness and that kind of forgiveness and love that he gave to everybody he met. So he was diagnosed with cancer in 2010, and in 2011, I started surfing. And again, in hindsight, I think at the time I thought, oh, I just don't want to be a bad surfer. So I ran to the ocean every single day to surf because I was older. I was 41 years old. That's pretty late in life to start surfing. But now in hindsight, I know for certain that I was out there, you know, healing from his CT scans and healing from the white blood cell counts that are dropping what felt like by the day. And it was a time of reflection and it was a time of peace. It was my church. It was, you know, my gym. It was all of these things that I needed the ocean to be at that time. And from 2011 to his passing in 2016, I quite literally immersed myself in the ocean. And it's kind of become a cliche. I hate to say this, but very often surfers will tell you the ocean or surfing saved their life. And it's absolutely not meant to be dramatic. I think it's just honest. It allows you to leave what's there for you on land just for a moment. You know, sometimes those moments last for 2 hours because it's really good swell. But in that time, you are allowed not to be sort of weighed down by the most important person in your life is experiencing at the time, which is chemotherapy every 2 weeks. I think the saddest, hardest part for me is that he really wanted to live. I say that. I feel like everybody really wants to live, but he would say things like, "I really want to see where you go and what you do in life." And that broke my heart. About a month after he passed in 2016, I was offered the position to work as a program director at a local surf therapy.
And can we just pause on that for a moment? If mm-hmm. people aren't familiar with surf therapy, what that's about?
Oh, sure, sure. So surf therapy, what is surf therapy? I feel like I need to take all of your listeners down to the beach and get them out on a day. But essentially, there are organizations around the world that are bringing people down to the beach, typically prioritizing the most vulnerable populations out there, bringing them down to the beach for a day of surfing. And I know that's in its simplest form, but that is essentially what we are doing. The populations we're prioritizing are those from marginalized communities and children on the autism spectrum or veterans struggling from PTSD, women struggling from violence and trauma, men recently released from prison, farmers, and oh gosh, liquid therapy, who took out Chernobyl survivors. So I think what we're seeing is, one, the benefits of being in nature, being physically active in nature. Obviously, we're seeing major psychological and physical benefits, and there's countless amounts of research out there that tells us being physically active in nature is beneficial for our health and well-being. But we're a little biased. I think that we believe there's something very special about surfing, something so unique about surfing and being out there in Mother Nature in a different way, because you're surrounded by dolphins and you're surrounded by whales. And it's warm here in California. We've got all of the stingrays out right now. And the other day I was surfing and forgetting to surf because below me were, I always refer to stingrays as the butterflies of the ocean. And there's so many beautiful stingrays out, and I'm just too busy looking at them instead of surfing. And so there's so much stimuli happening. So yeah, it's really intentional. Surf therapy programs put a lot into putting these days together. Obviously, there are staff. There is usually a clinician there on the beach, sometimes several clinicians. You have, of course, surf instructors. You've got water safety. You've got everybody down there to serve these incredible individuals with all of their unique stories. And we give them a day of reprieve. Some of our very vulnerable populations obviously live in the circumstances in which either they were born into and or have found themselves in. And so this moment to allow them to be fully immersed in what they are doing and away from, again, what's waiting for them on land is, it's something to be witnessed. And if I can say anything to you and to everybody who's out there listening, please, please go volunteer at a surf therapy program. They are taking place all over the world on 6 continents. And I have to say, in running surf therapy programs, if everybody is feeling that moment of, it's not even just about giving back more than it's about connecting. You know, we are creating these beautiful safe spaces on the beach. And what we're finding is it doesn't matter what ails you. We just know after a day of surf therapy, you feel a little better. And that's the magic that's happening. I would call the circles kumbaya circles, but what we really found, and I would have volunteers quite literally use the words, this feels like a safe space and I feel like I can share. And again, nothing more complimentary than when you are organically trying to create something. So it's structured. Everybody, you know, volunteers at 8. Participants or athletes, as I refer to them, at 9. You know, kumbaya circle till 10. And then there's do a lesson on land. And then we get them in the water for 2 hours. And here in California, again, it's usually sunny and beautiful and warm. So we come back up on the beach after 2 hours in the ocean and have lunch. Because there's nothing more bonding than eating. This is a cross culture. We all bond over food. And then there's this really cool thing about surfers in that we love to talk about our waves. So if you had anybody at the beginning of that circle that you created at the beginning of your session, a little bit quieter or perhaps a little bit nervous or anxious, after they caught 10 waves, they're the ones in the closing circle that can't stop talking about their waves. And it's really one of the most wonderful, beautiful experiences to witness. So surf therapy, you know, it's an alternative methodology. If you want to get clinical, yes, we have published the definition, method of intervention, combining surfing and activities to promote psychological, physical, and psychosocial well-being. That definition was facilitated by the International Surf Therapy Organization and again published in the first ever academic journal dedicated to surf therapy research, which came out last year in the Global Journal of Community Psychology Practice. But these are steps forward to validate our efforts on the beach. So we're working on that.
And it's so exciting to me to hear, you know, how much progress you've made in terms of formalizing best practices around surf therapy and all the research behind it, but also so exciting that because it's newer, it's also very cutting edge. And so as someone living in Birmingham, which in England is as far as you can get from the sea, basically right in the middle, it's something that when I heard about your work through a wonderful friend of mine, I knew I had to talk to you about it because I can see all the elements you're bringing together, right? So we often talk about on the show the importance of exercise. Through the pandemic, we've talked a lot about being out in nature and the kind of stabilizing force it can be to see the seasons continue to change at a time when our world feels very stuck. So you've got those elements in. You've got the facilitating conversations where, yes, you have clinicians there and you have training in order to have safe conversations about mental health and what's going on for people. But it's not, okay, let's all sit in a circle and tell us your deepest, darkest straight away. Instead, you have this shared activity to lead people into these conversations. And, you know, maybe they're bringing frustration on the day and then they can talk about that through the waves. And beyond that, then it becomes, okay, what is really that frustration about? Yeah, and that's what really fascinates me about it, all these combining these different parts. And so I understand what you're saying of, yes, in many ways, a lot of sports have this, but it sounds like there's all these elements. And then the additional one that you mentioned of being out in the sea. And so you can literally step off land where your problems are and be immersed in nature in a way that is distracting in a very powerful way, because it's very difficult to think in any depth about something that might be going on before you got in the water when you've got a wave that might crash over you if you don't pay attention, and you've got dolphins swimming by you that's incredible and I'm sure never gets old. And then so many people around you that you're looking out for as well. So it's very exciting, fascinating to hear about.
Yeah, there's stimulation everywhere. And to your point, you can't get away from it in a good way. And of course, in the way of let's keep everybody safe. We are dealing with the unpredictability of Mother Nature and the ocean. But it's exciting. It's exciting to be alive, because you and I have our entire lives been able to get a prescription for psychotherapy. And more so, certainly in the last couple of decades, insurance will cover that. Surf therapy universally accessible hasn't happened yet. So it's really exciting to be in a world where I grew up and that was not a thing. And we're already starting to see that become a thing. It is on our 5-year goals. It is exciting. Last year, a world pandemic, it's going to, and it did, exacerbate the need for mental health support. And to have alternative methodologies, also surfing is just cool, but to have alternative methodologies supporting the most vulnerable populations is something we all need. And that's really, I think, some of the most interesting things that the International Surf Therapy Organization is doing this year, which is we have developed these working groups based on populations served. And we really have just created a space for these organizations to meet one another, to network, to connect, to learn from one another, kind of processing everything that's happening around the world. And it's really just, again, connecting us. And that was always what ISTO was about. ISTO was always meant to, how are we connecting and growing the sector? Because before 2017, when we were founded, the surf therapy programs didn't talk to one another. They didn't share and learn from one another's good and bad experiences. And today, we're extremely proud to say that surf therapy programs are not only talking to one another, but even based on region, are working together a bit more. We have become a backbone organization with a plethora of research. We actually just launched the first international pilot study, which is very exciting because there are 18 surf therapy programs across different populations conducting research using our surveys, and really excited to see what the outcomes of that is. It's only June and we've got 200 data sets already. So I imagine by the end of this year, you know, we'll double, triple that. It's just incredible what's happening around the globe.
No, absolutely. And I'd love to hear a bit more about the transformation you see with the groups you work with. So from how people tend to turn up on a first day of surf therapy, even the change that you might see after one day as people walk away.
I think that's one of the coolest things to have witnessed. A lot of our participants or athletes, understandably, are nervous. They haven't into the ocean, many of them, which is another topic, access to the ocean. And they have certainly not surfed before. And many of them will say, I don't even know how to swim. And so understandably, they're stressed and a little bit anxious. And also besides that, the other things that are happening in their life. So they tend to walk down across the very long walk over the sand with their heads down and their arms crossed a lot. And even in that first kumbaya circle, you know who is in their feelings and is feeling a little bit quieter and definitely not interested in even really engaging. And then as I mentioned, they catch 10 waves and it all changes. We have a marriage family therapist, MFT, who's running a surf therapy program now. And he said he likens one surf therapy day to over 6 weeks of traditional treatment. That's what he's seeing. The changes of somebody from the moment their feet touch the sand until the end of that day. And that day can sometimes be 4 or 5 hours, and sometimes it can be 8 hours. Obviously, we're not in the water that long, but we are all together for that long. I think traditional talk therapy, it's harder. It's harder for us to have to sit on a couch and talk to somebody, especially if we don't really know them that well. I always say this. We really, really have traded in the couch for a surfboard. But there is this really special thing that happens so quickly down on the beach. And again, because we don't expect or even really ask our participants to have to talk about what ails them, there is this automatic common bond. For example, a lot of the veterans programs that I have worked with bring people down from different areas. So they don't know each other. Not all the veterans know one another. But there is just this immediate bond in that they know that for the most part, what's ailing them probably is also ailing someone else. Maybe it's homelessness or addiction or, of course, the struggles from PTSD. And what they say to me is it feels so good to not have to talk about it. Because in traditional treatment, and certainly if they're going through the VA and checking all the boxes of what they have to do in order to get the funding, which is a part of it, funding and their health insurance and doing all the things, they have to talk about it. That's what they have to do. And then they come down to surf therapy and we don't ask them to have to discuss anything that they don't want to. And what you'll see is very often they will open up organically because, again, it becomes this safe space for them. But there are no expectations on them, on anybody who comes down to the beach. It really is about being present. Again, 101 million things that the ocean teaches us. But being present and patient and meeting our participants or athletes where they are. So if they want to sit on the beach and dig for seashells or sand crabs, then that's what we do with them. And if they want to go jump on 20 waves, we'll go get them out in 20 waves. Unlike any traditional, not just treatment, even if you think about school or any other venue that some of our most vulnerable populations have to succeed in or even just function in, there's a lot of expectations on them. And there are zero when they come down to surf therapy. The very first thing I say is the first trick you learn is how to fall. Be prepared to master falling. And if you don't fall, you're not trying hard enough. And so it immediately puts everybody on this level playing field of, oh, so wait, I'm going to fall down? Like, yeah, that's okay, because everybody falls down and that's a part of learning. So there's this idea of what somebody might consider failing, that is falling, to be a bad thing. And I immediately put them at ease and say, no, no, no. That's the first trick you learn. And as a Hawaiian Filipino, we say, however you ride the wave, you've surfed that wave. So the measure is not standing up on a surfboard. You know, traditional Hawaiians will tell you, you shouldn't even use a board. You should use your body and ride that wave holistically, right? Be one with that wave. But it doesn't matter if you're on your stomach or your knees. And it is a great privilege to ride the breath of a wave that very often started 1,000 miles away, maybe 100 miles away, and it only has one life and then it's returned to the sea. So you have this privilege of getting to ride the breath of that wave. So I didn't mean to. I think maybe my Hawaiian culture sort of just kind of played a role in that, but I really always wanted to and mean to put everybody at ease when it comes to something, frankly, that is not easy to do. Surfing is not easy. And we typically, most surf therapy programs, right, we've got people on the back that boogie board the back. So we give them the stability, but it's still not easy. It is one of the hardest things I have ever tried in my life. And I grew up playing sports. I think the moment you put people at a place of, oh, wait, I can fall down. And that's sort of what's expected. Because where else in your life do you ever fall down and that's expected?
You've reminded me of something that a friend of mine does that's a maths teacher, and maybe it was that you mentioned maths earlier. And this is something that's very much not on the curriculum, but at the same time, when she meets students, you know, sometimes a decade or two later, they so often remember this, and it's she includes showing them how to work out where people have gone wrong in getting to their answers. And so she'll put up formulas, sometimes they're simple, sometimes they're complex, depends on the age group, and then puts up the wrong answers. And so they have to try and work out where they went wrong. And so sometimes it could be something simple like they've added two numbers where they should have times them. And not only is that good in terms of looking at maths another way and getting better at sort of seeing where you've gone wrong, it's also good for acknowledging that there's learning from doing wrong. And that's really what she's trying to put in. And I think that's what you've really highlighted, because whilst I've not read all the wonderful research your organisation has been part of, I can see where so many of the links can be, that you're empowering people with a skill they may have never thought they had, something that is really difficult and is meant to be difficult, and that sort of becomes part of the intrigue. In the same way, you know, life is really difficult and there's a lot of failure and there's no perfect way to be human. Similarly, there's no perfect way to ride a wave, and so they do their best. And isn't that what we're told as kids? You know, you do your best. And then through that, people open up conversations. They might feel more confident that they're learning things they couldn't do yesterday. And they've got this shared activity to talk about. And then they've got you, yourself and other facilitators to have conversations about how the day's going for them, but also how life is going for them. I can see just how all-encompassing that kind of experience must be. And so you were telling me a bit about, you know, how people come onto the programme. And so what are they like then in terms of leaving it after a day?
First of all, they really just want to talk about their waves, which is great, because there is this idea of, I don't think we do this enough. I don't believe we celebrate our small or big wins enough for ourselves. I think we're really good about giving accolades to other people and cheering them on, being their biggest cheerleader. But when it comes to ourselves, we are not so quick to celebrate things that we have accomplished. And so that closing circle, again, while we're eating lunch and talking, it's not just the individual who is surfing. We also have their surf instructor give them immediate feedback. And again, based on the circumstances in which many of our populations live in, there aren't a lot of praises and cheerleading for them in life. And so it's something so special and tangible. They quite literally can put their finger on it. And the smiles, like from ear to ear, and they don't stop. Even sometimes you have somebody come down and you can't help but you a little bit worry, oh goodness, I hope they have fun today. I hope I can bring them out, but no expectations, ride the wave, not the expectation, all the lessons that the ocean continues to teach. And then they're the ones that are smiling the most and the most proud. You know, we would have veterans say things like, I survived out there in the ocean, which makes me feel like I can go do anything. They would come back and tell us the things that they did, like apply for school or apply for a job. Or students would say, I decided to try out for cheerleading or the basketball team because I never thought I could surf. And now you showed me, if I can go do this crazy thing, if I can go do this thing that is so difficult and it feels it's not tangible to them at all, if they can accomplish that and overcome all of their fears, of course it translates to life on land. I remember one of the young boys said, you know, I fell off 9 times, but I got back up on that 10th wave and I rode it all the way to shore. Of course, I'm crying. I'm like trying not to cry, but I'm crying from that realization on his own. We didn't need to prompt him. I actually sort of, in my position, am running around the whole time, so I didn't even know he fell off 9 times. But for him to acknowledge the part about getting back up, which to your point is what you have to do on land. You will constantly be hit with all different sizes, shapes of waves for your entire life. And the only thing that matters is how you respond to them. And the ocean also, of course, teaches us to go with the flow. Don't fight it. You fight it, you can get hurt. You can struggle and lose your breath hold. You can, you know, a lot of things happen when you try to fight the waves. And that's very, very true on land. I have to say, there are faces and smiles and laughters that resonate with me still today. I've had the great privilege of getting to volunteer at about 15 surf therapy programs around the world. And as much as I love getting to see what they all do, a lot of it is based on culture. In Africa, we dance and we sing for an hour before anybody gets in the ocean. How cool is that? In Portugal, I had no idea what they were saying for 5 hours, but the universal language of Stoke is real. And when people are happy and smiling and cheering, not just for one another, because that's another thing you get to see that's really special. If siblings come down, they cheer for each other. And think about all the sports that we, you know, witness in school growing up, all of the different sports. First of all, the brother and sister are not playing on the same team. So they're not necessarily quite literally riding the wave together, cheering each other on. And that's what surf therapy does. Not only do we bring everybody out there and everybody becomes, again, the ocean is the great equalizer. Everybody becomes the same and they're riding waves and the siblings are cheering one another on. And there's something very special about that because outside of it, the brother and sister are playing different sports, if they're playing sports at all, but they're certainly playing different sports. So much inclusion happens specifically at surf therapy programs because you're bringing all these people together. There's a community. I think one of my favorite stories is Surfers Not Street Children in Mozambique. The name came because they would walk through the streets with their wetsuits on. And Tom Hewitt, the legend that he is, who started the organization, would tell them, oh, you don't need to walk in your wetsuit. You can change in your wetsuit down on the beach and in the ocean. They said to him, when we have wetsuits on, we're not street kids. They quite literally changed their identity based on their wetsuits. And now they're surfers. Okay, that's extremely special. I can't think of anything that quite literally changes someone's identity based on an outfit that they're wearing, with the exception of like Superman or right, superheroes. Like they put on their costume and they become this thing. But that is exactly how these extremely vulnerable young men and women who are quite literally living on the streets feel when they put on their wetsuit or maybe their armor. That's pretty special. That's pretty cool. So there's all of these. I could go on and on and on. The examples. It's beautiful.
And when I've heard it's you talk beautiful. About that before, it's been partly how people react to them, that not just that, the community reacts to them as surfers now. And so they can feel elevated and feel like they have a status that for many of them, they've never had in their life. And I think even just something as straightforward as that might sound, if you can get a taste for that, if you can get a taste for what it's like to walk through your town with a whole different identity, how motivating that must be of, oh, I could have a different life. You know, there is a future for me where maybe every day I could walk through and get a level of respect and recognition and, you know, acknowledgement. You know, that's not a distinct issue in one place. You know, if we think of any of the cities that we know and love, how much acknowledgement do people living on the streets get? Are they looked in the eye in the same way that you would someone you're passing by in a business suit? You know, there's so many elements of what you're talking about that I'm just like, wow, even just one of those. And I think that's probably why that colleague of yours that says, you know, he can see the transformation in people that might take 6 months in therapy, because that can be 6 months of building a relationship, getting them to open up, helping them feel like it's a safe space. And actually, you can prove a safe space by people cheering each other on and giving training and people overcoming maybe fear of the water in such a physical way that's, yeah, can be a real fast track for a lot of people. And that's so incredible. And another thing I wanted to pick up that links to that is you were talking about how you drive inclusion. I think that's something that for a lot of people would hold them back from, specifically that sport and the addition of it as surf therapy, as the therapeutic version of it, is that for many people around the world, we think of surfing as something so specific. We think of maybe people out of Baywatch. We think of white people. We think of blonde, very athletic young people. And it can be easy to think, oh, maybe you need to look like that. Maybe you need to be that person. And actually, you're showing that it is accessible. And not only that, the history of this sport is from people of color.
Yes, my people. I'm very proud of the fact that, I mean, it was observed in the 1700s in Tahiti, but they say it really started with Polynesian cultures long before that. And back to your point, people want to feel seen, heard, and valued, especially those living on the streets, homeless, and many, many other things. You're absolutely right. They are looked down upon, and there is this immediate judgment on how they got into their circumstances. You know, there are people that are homeless who had a job until COVID. It's a population that needs to be considered and taken care of. And that is another thing I would always, during the volunteer meeting, is remind the volunteers that we all want to be seen, heard, and valued. And a tremendous way to do that is when you come down to a surf therapy program and nobody even knows that there are staff members versus volunteers versus really even participants. And you only know the difference because the participants are the ones surfing. But other than that, it does feel immediately like a safe space for everybody, not, again, not just the participants. Back to what you were saying earlier, I'm really proud of what we are organically producing down on the beach. It is full inclusion. We are giving, I guess, providing access. We're providing the means, the very expensive surfboards, the very expensive wetsuits most of our populations could not afford. And these safe spaces are important, and everybody should have access to nature. It's a real travesty that certainly here in America, summers are some of the most segregated seasons because getting to the beaches and the coastlines are near impossible. And I wish this was something that was only 100 years ago, but segregation at the beaches, it's still happening today, even at a surf break not that far from me, sadly. So I think it's really important that these programs are providing essential access and needs. And many of the programs, they'll go pick up people. They are literally picking them up and bringing them down to the ocean. Doesn't get cooler than that. And I can't remember if my doctor or dentist has ever offered to pick me up for an appointment, but the answer is no, they have not. So neither has my therapist. You know, surf therapy programs really are changing the landscape of what mental health support looks like and feels like. And I think I said this to you the other day, but when is the last time you sat in your dentist's office, your doctor's office, and started a conversation with the people next to you? Most people just don't do that. Sure, some people do that, but it's so rare that they do that. And down at the beach, everybody is talking.
I guess I never thought of that. It's funny, isn't it, when you think about these things, and you're like, well, in the dentist, you're all there for the same reason. So you actually do have a lot more in common than you might think. And, you know, I guess you're shining a light on that because people are all trying to figure out the same sport that, you know, usually they're all new to. And that's part of what excites me about your work. Not only is it cutting edge in terms of a type of support which is still being pioneered, but also how you're going at it. When so many support services around mental health have issues with access, have issues with getting support to particular communities, those are so often the communities you're starting with, the ones that may be falling through the cracks everywhere else. And so, you know, absolutely, with that approach, it'd be difficult to see how you're not going to have, you know, diversity and supporting people no matter what perspective they're coming from at the heart of it. So, yeah, thank you for the work.
Yeah, back to
Well, back to your very first question or thought-provoking, you know, idea, mental health has been in the dark long enough. So this idea of shining a big bright light on it and talking about our mental health, and it is in this unique, very special way that is SURF therapy programs, we're making a difference and it's working.
And it's so incredible. So yeah, thank you for all the wonderful work you do. Incredible support with dolphins. What more do you want?
And whales and sea otters. And it's all about connection and wanting to feel closer to people and not wanting to feel alone. And that's what nature does for us. So get to nature, sit, get to water, go surf.
There we go. There's the call to action. And I hope to join you sometime when we can all travel again and yeah, see it in action for myself. So thank you so much for joining me. If people want to find out more about your organization, they can go to intlsurftherapy.org. Anywhere else they should check out?
We're on all the social media channels, Instagram at intlsurftherapy.org, at Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, all of those places. But I'm going to say this again, volunteer. I found surf therapy by volunteering the year that I started surfing. So volunteer, get out there, give back to your community. You will receive so much more. As always, we know the benefits, the health benefits of volunteering, but get down to surf therapy programs above and beyond. I hate to even tell people go on social media. Don't, I am not an advocate for get on your phone or your computer. I would like
quickly
to.
Quickly check it on your phone, then get your off your phone, run straight to the beach.
I'm encouraging everybody. We have surfing, as I mentioned, on six continents and South Korea and in Russia and everywhere in between. So it's happening on lakes and it's happening on rivers. Please, please get to surf therapy and volunteer and or, you know, just support it however you can. But advocating, Bobby, I cannot say thank you enough, because to bring exposure helps educate those who didn't know anything about this topic prior.
Oh, yeah,
and
me
I am
2 weeks
so
ago.
Grateful.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so grateful. I am so grateful that you would use your platform for good, as obviously as you do. I have, you know, listen to many, many of your podcasts. And I am so forever thankful that you said, hey, I think more people need to know about this. That seems to be creating some big waves out there. And we are extremely proud and excited about the work that our practitioners are doing. Thank you so much, Bobby. I can't say it enough. And yes, we will go surf.
Brilliant. You're on.
Thank you for listening. For a list of our recommended resources, visit mentalpodcast.co.uk. And remember, we are in no way a substitute for qualified counselling or other mental health support. Our show is edited and produced by the brilliant Pete Murta, with licensed music by NetSky. Links in the description. Speak to you next Thursday, and remember, you are enough.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.